Chapter 3. The Truth About Sudden Infant Death Syndrome and Cancer. Party Line Number 2. Sudden Infant Death Syndrome is still a mystery to medical science. More research is needed to find the pathogen, which is now suspected to be a virus, or group of viruses, that somehow overwhelm the infant's immune system. After the virus is identified, a vaccine can be administered at some point during the first month of life. Quote, crib death was so infrequent in pre-vaccination eras that it was not even mentioned in statistics. It only started to increase in the 1950s with mass vaccination programs. Unquote. Harris Coulter, Ph.D. The AMA claims ignorance to what sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, actually is. Valid research shows that it is nothing more than excess toxemia and brain damage the child receives as a result of vaccination. A well-known fact not discussed in the American press is that Japan increased their minimum vaccination age to 2 years from 2 months old in 1975. Upon doing this, SIDS, spinal meningitis, and many other related nervous system diseases virtually disappeared from the country. Japan then went from number 17 in infant mortality to number 1 in the world. Of course, children began to have all sorts of problems again beginning at age 2, when they received their vaccines. Research also done by numerous chiropractic organizations cite atlas subluxation to be a probable factor. Over 90% of SIDS cases are found to have this atlas subluxation upon autopsy. The atlas is the first neck vertebrae, directly under the head. Chiropractors believe that in addition to toxemia related to vaccines, modern hospital birthing procedures traumatize this delicate area of the spinal cord at the atlas, called the brainstem. The atlas subluxation, a malalignment of the vertebrae that places undue pressure on this area of the brainstem, can certainly interfere with proper respiratory and cardiac functions in an infant, even to the extent of shutting these systems down as the atlas subluxation, which began at birth, becomes more chronic. Although the bulk of the medical profession hasn't a clue what to make of SIDS, they are very adept of telling you what it isn't. They are definitely not listening to the chiropractors about atlas subluxation, and they are emphatic that SIDS is not caused by vaccines. Can we trust them? Reading the packet insert from the DBT vaccine from the Wyeth Company. Quote, the occurrence of SIDS has been reported following the administration of DPT. The significance of these reports is unclear. Unquote. And remember, cigarettes don't cause cancer. The fact that SIDS is created by vaccine toxemia is only unclear to Wyeth. Continuing on with the DPT packet insert. Quote, it should be kept in mind that the three primary doses of DPT are usually administered to infants between the ages of 2 and 6 months, and that approximately 85% of all SIDS cases occur in the periods 1 to 6 months, with peak incidence at ages 2 to 4 months. Unquote. Are the significance of these reports still unclear to you? This is essentially an admission of guilt. Older data from the CDC used to list that approximately 10,000 babies die per year from what is called crib death, or SIDS. 85% of these cases occur within the 2nd to 4th month of life, and this just happens to coincide with the initial DPT and polio inoculations. This is not a coincidence. Suppose you go into your pediatrician's office to get your child's DPT shot, and the doctor actually gave you a warning beforehand. Quote, Mrs. Smith, let me first tell you that the Assistant Secretary of Health testified before the U.S. Senate Committee on May 3, 1985, that every year 35,000 children suffer some form of neurological damage, possibly even SIDS, as a result of receiving these vaccines. Okay, that's my disclaimer. Are you ready to give your child the shots? When you call the CDC to obtain information on SIDS, they refer you to the Propaganda Center for SIDS, called the Sudden Infant Death Syndrome Resource Center. You can indeed receive a ton of resources from this resource center. I received information from them which states, 1. SIDS is the number one cause of death of infants between 1 month and 1 year, with peak incidence at 2 and 4 months. 2. SIDS is determined only after an autopsy, examination of the death scene, and a review of clinical history. 3. It is a recognized disorder, listed in the International Classification of Diseases. 4. It is not caused by DPT vaccines or other vaccines. How do professionals diagnose SIDS? According to the CDC, quote, when an infant death is sudden and unexplained, investigators including medical examiners and coroners use the special expertise of forensic medicine. SIDS is no exception. Health professionals make use of 3 avenues of investigation. During the autopsy, a definitive diagnosis cannot be made without a thorough post-mortem examination that fails to point to any other possible cause of death. Unquote. In other words, if the autopsy doesn't say the infant died from anything else, the diagnosis is SIDS. The medical profession uses SIDS as a garbage diagnosis when nothing else shows up, and this is a high crime since the causes of SIDS are obvious and blatant. It should be reworded that a mysterious infant death of this nature is presumed to be SIDS until further evidence proves otherwise. Party line number 3. We need more money for research to fight cancer and chronic disease, which for some inconclusive reason are reaching pandemic levels. A viral culprit is suspected. Quote, have we traded mumps and measles for cancer and leukemia in children? Unquote. Robert Mendelson, M.D. How to Raise a Healthy Child in Spite of Your Doctor, 1984. Quote, the results of suppressing measles and other infectious diseases by vaccinations are cancer and other autoimmune and chronic diseases. Unquote. V. Scheibner, Immunization, The Medical Assault on the Immune System, 1993. Quote, measles vaccination in childhood was related to the following diseases in adult life. Autoimmune diseases of bone and cartilage and certain tumors. Unquote. Lancet, 1985. In the 1950s, during the polio vaccination campaigns, scientists learned that the polio vaccine administered to most children was contaminated with a highly carcinogenic monkey virus called SV40. The public was never notified, and use of the vaccine was continued. By 1961, over 90% of school children received this carcinogenic virus from the vaccine, as over 100 million shots were given. As well, 62 studies from 30 worldwide laboratories link the polio vaccine to brain tumors, bone cancers, lung lining cancers, and leukemia, according to the American Association for Cancer Research in San Francisco, 2002 study, www.bmn.com. The rates of all these cancers have gone up dramatically in the past 30 years, especially in children. Cancer has been steadily on the rise in America amongst children since the onset of mandatory vaccination programs in the 1950s. Pediatric cancers are rising 1% per year since 1974 and are the leading cause of death in children after accidents. Leukemia and brain tumors are the most common childhood malignancies, having a 35% rise in pediatric brain cancer between 1973 and 1974, as reported by Science magazine in 1999. Even though overwhelming evidence points to the obvious culprit, vaccines are not tested for their ability to cause cancer, mutations, or developmental malformations, nor are they tested to see if they will affect the child's reproductive system. These tests are routine for items like shampoo and cosmetics, but not for mandatory vaccines? Something is very wrong here, notwithstanding the obvious cancer connection to vaccines, but also considering that over 25% of American couples are experiencing fertility problems since 1994. Quote, cancer was practically unknown until smallpox vaccination began. I have never seen a case of cancer in a non-vaccinated person. Unquote. W.B. Clark, M.D. author. Quote, I'm convinced that some 80% of these cancer deaths are caused by smallpox vaccinations. These are well known to cause grave and permanent disease of the heart also. Unquote. Herbert Snow, M.D., London Cancer Hospital. Quote, I am convinced that the increase of cancer is due to vaccination. Forbes Laurie, M.D., Metro Cancer Hospital, London. Quote, "The most frequent disposing condition for cancerous development is vaccination and revaccination." Unquote. Dennis Turnbull, MD cancer researcher. Regarding the nature of chronic and fatal disease related to vaccine abuse, one must first understand the nature of a virus. So what is a virus? Many in the natural healing community don't even believe they exist, not naturally anyway. Being that they don't eat, excrete, breathe, move freely, or reproduce, viruses do not fit the criteria for organic life as we know it. In fact, no one has ever seen a live virus. They are so small, they can only be viewed under intense magnification, which requires specially prepared dead tissue. Let's say some pharmaceutical company grants a large sum of money to a university to find the polio viruses we spoke of in the last chapter. As you know, the monkey's kidney is injected with poisons until it becomes very sick. A researcher can culture some of that monkey's kidney tissue to look for the viruses, and there you have it. Lo and behold, every time the researcher cultures that sick monkey's kidney, viruses are found suspected to cause polio. But what is the researcher really looking at? It is a known fact that toxemia of any body tissue causes the cell membranes to break down. The cells of any diseased tissue actually lyse, or explode. When they do, the cell membranes shatter, much like your car windshield would if you got into a car accident. They shatter, and tiny pieces fall all over the place quickly. Viruses are little pieces of cell membrane with genetic material inside. Inside each human cell, there is a nucleus which contains genetic material called DNA, deoxyribonucleic acid. This nucleus has a nuclear membrane which is practically identical to the cell membrane. There is also a roadway to the nucleus of each human cell called the endoplasmic reticulum. It has ribosomes connected to it, and ribosomes also contain genetic material called RNA, ribonucleic acid. This endoplasmic reticulum is also made of cellular membrane material. Each human cell is actually a swimming pool with these organelles contained in a watery mixture called cytoplasm. Cytoplasm also contains the genetic material RNA. So as you can see, there is no shortage of genetic material in any human cell. In toxemia, when the cell bursts due to lysis, there is an abundance of cellular membrane material containing the sticky proteins of DNA and RNA now floating in the fluid between the other living cells, called the interstitial fluid. This process is similar to your car windshield bursting with one of those fine-line radio antennas inside it. Pieces of the antennae will be found in many of the shattered pieces of the windshield. Similarly, it is normal to find tiny pieces of cell membrane with DNA or RNA inside it, or stuck to it in a sick person. There is a lot of cell lysis due to their levels of toxemia. This is what many lab technicians, MDs, and researchers are looking at under high magnification when looking for viruses. They have simply given a name to a phenomena of cellular toxemia, calling it a virus, and placing on it as much blame as they can. This idea of a viral organism is not one backed by any real scientific fact, since viruses aren't even alive. Can a virus enter a normal, healthy human cell and start creating havoc within a person? Yes, I still believe they can, but this happens much like a rock being hurled at your car windshield while driving. These dead fragments of cellular membrane with genetic material, either caught inside of it or stuck to it, create havoc in an otherwise healthy cell, since they are invaders, proteinaceous, and genetic in nature. This invasion can create an overload of stress to the cell, but the invasion is not coming from any kind of invading organism. It is coming from these scattered pieces of junk or cellular debris, which are abundant in all toxic people. However, one must also realize that any so-called virus that can invade a cell can also be manufactured purposely to do so. Governments from many countries, especially the United States, have run wild with this viral theory, working on creating a microscopic monster since World War II. The goal is the ultimate weapon for germ warfare. Manufactured or man-made genetic material can certainly be created as a lethal weapon. Genes from various sources that don't belong together can be spliced into a killer strand of DNA or RNA. Wrap this genetic material in a cell membrane carrier vehicle, and you have your ultimate weapon. This genetic material is so toxic that it causes cells to explode the moment it crosses the cell membrane. When injected, on purpose, in high concentrations into the blood, these free-floating RNA and DNA genetic molecules float into the cell and through the nuclear membrane. Within the nucleus, they can cause severe disruptions to the cell's ability to divide normally, or recreate itself, as cells do millions of times per day. God created a perfect reproducing organism without flaws. This genetic material interferes with that very principle. When the cell cannot reproduce normally, it is damaged and acts to produce a damaged organism. This can even cause the cell to divide wildly, with toxic imperfections and out of control, which is the fundamental basis of cancer. Live and attenuated viral vaccines provide you with this highly toxic genetic material. It has always floored me that parents give these shots to their children without a single question as to the nature of their contents. What is there to stop a government or military organization from placing experimental genetic material into vaccines to control select populations at will? Do you really believe these organizations are beyond that type of action? By administering genetic fragments into the blood, cancer and mutations are far more likely than increased resistance to disease. Since childhood cancer is now the leading cause of childhood disease death, one should take these facts very seriously. These genetic fragments cause the cell to divide abnormally, and this again is the fundamental basis of all cancers known to plague humankind. In 1976, Dr. Robert Simpson of Rutgers University was addressing science writers at a seminar of the American Cancer Society. He said, quote, "Immunization programs against flu, measles, mumps, polio, and so forth may actually be seeding humans with RNA to form latent proviruses in cells throughout the body. These latent proviruses are molecules in search of creating disease, including rheumatoid arthritis, multiple sclerosis, lupus, Parkinson's disease, and cancer," unquote. In his book, The Case Against Immunization, Richard Moskowitz, MD, writes, quote, "These genetic particles attach their own genetic material as an extra particle or episome to the chromosome of the host cell and replicate along with it. This allows the host cell to continue its own normal functions for the most part, but it places upon it additional instructions for the synthesis of viral proteins. This presence of antigenic material in the host cell cannot fail to produce autoimmune phenomena, such as herpes, shingles, warts, tumors both benign and malignant, and diseases of the central nervous system, such as various forms of paralysis and inflammation of the brain," unquote. As a reminder, AIDS, lupus, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, and cancer are all autoimmune diseases. Fact of the matter is, the vaccination campaigns that have been hoisted upon the American public for the past 50 years are directly responsible for the astronomical increases in cancer we are seeing today. Diet and environmental toxins are also a piece of the cancer puzzle, but they shy next to this vaccination component. The late Dr. Robert Bell had quite a few credentials to his name. Cancer specialist of the British Medical Hospital, President of the Medical Association for the Reduction and Prevention of Cancer, Vice President of the International Society of Cancer Research, and member of the American Society of Progressive Physicians. He simply had this to say in 1982, short and not so sweet. Quote, "The chief, if not sole cause of the monstrous increase in cancer has been vaccinations," unquote. Research over the past 50 years on the correlation between cancer and vaccinations is difficult, if not impossible, to find. The CDC and AMA have made sure of this. You will also be hard-pressed to find a case of cancer in an unvaccinated person, especially an unvaccinated child. This research and thought never makes its way into the mainstream for very good reasons. Primarily, it's really bad for business. Can you imagine a media story about an unvaccinated child that is super healthy? This is the AMA's worst nightmare. The reader should start thinking, CDC equals NIH equals AMA equals FDA equals lawmakers equals pharmaceutical company. They are all part of the same club organization rendering huge profits from the business of keeping people very sick and diseased. Once you have a stable population of sick people constantly using your services, you can make further profits on taking care of them. This is a crime only the devil could have masterminded. You must wake up to the fact, or at least begin to consider that all those who follow it are either demons themselves or victims of mass brainwashing. Dr. K. Morrison, formerly professor of chemistry and toxicology at the National University of Washington, member of the Medical Council, and an examiner in the College of Physicians and Surgeons in Canada, said in 1984, quote, two well-known causes of cancer are 1, nicotine, and 2, vaccinations. Vaccines are certainly the most prolific cause of internal and external cancer. The vaccine virus poisons the lymphatic system, impairs its function, and lays the foundation for internal cancer, from which there has not been any successful medical treatment to date. Unquote. From The Poison Needle by Eleanor McBean, Dr. Charles E. Pacer of Boston University wrote in 1989, quote, I have been a regular practitioner of medicine in Boston for 33 years. I have studied the question of vaccinations conscientiously for 45 years. As for vaccinations as a preventative of disease, there is not a scrap of evidence in its favor. Injection of virus into the pure bloodstream of the people does not prevent disease. Rather, it tends to increase epidemic and make the disease it is attempting to annihilate more deadly. Of this we have indisputable proof. In America, cancer mortality has increased from 9 cases per 100,000 to 80 cases per 100,000, or a 900% increase over the last 50 years. No conceivable thing could have caused this but the universal blood poisoning now existing in the form of vaccinations. Unquote. By the time children in America reach the age of 14, they receive anywhere from 50 to 70 separate vaccinations. The pharmaceutical companies and the government want you to receive more as well. According to them, your body is not clean enough unless you have these vaccines, and you are a threat to society. Each time you receive one of these vaccines, the risk of long-term damage to your body increases, and toxins accumulate to create chronic disease. The American Cancer Society tells us that the leading killer disease in children before the age of 14 is cancer. Statistically, if a person acquires a fatal cancer, death will occur within 5 years with medical treatment. If a person does not seek any kind of treatment, death occurs within an average of 12 years. Is this merely a coincidence? Any novice crime investigator would tell you no.